Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, so it could be a few weeks since the last one that you've been able to download, or it could just be a day, which is actually happening at this point because I recorded a new podcast a few days ago, but I haven't actually uploaded it yet by the time I'm now reviewing this book and doing this podcast recording. So if you haven't got the last episode, which is my review of Walter M. Miller Jr.'s Canticle for Leibowitz, it might be because your iTunes only downloads the latest episode in the podcast feed, so maybe it skipped one and you've just skipped an episode yourself, so go back and check that you've already got that episode. The reason for this is because the internet connection in Zanzibar was excruciatingly slow, so there was absolutely no way I could upload a 20-30 megabytes worth of data. It was just going to take hours and hours and hours, and in fact it didn't really get started at all. Just the time where it goes calculating time to upload this via FTP, it couldn't even work that out by the time I gave up on it. So that's the thing. This side of the equator, well, not this side of the equator, in Africa, in Zanzibar, not a good internet connection. Maybe in Dar es Salaam I'll find somewhere which is a little bit quicker to upload two episodes at once. Yes, the digital divide that people talk about here in Africa is very wide. Sometimes, you know, the whole point is that, how are they ever going to catch up? How are these developing nations ever going to catch up if they don't have any kind of internet connection or computer access? And, I want computer access while I'm down here as well, working on the cruise ship here, down here in Africa, East Africa. But, I'm enjoying it. I don't have any news because I haven't really been connected to the world or done very much since the last time I recorded a podcast, and I gave lots of news on the last podcast. Except, I guess yesterday I went snorkeling, which was very good fun, and I fed some giant tortoises, which was also good fun. But I guess you don't really care about that. So let's get straight on to today's book. From 2002, we have a first novel, a very good first novel, by the way, called Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan, who as a first novel, on the back of the book and on the inside covers of this book, it's all like, completely blown away by Altered Carbon. You know, as a first novel, it's amazing. As a first novel, it's amazing. You know, it's a commanding novel. And it's all going on about how great it is as a first novel. But don't let that fool you. It's not just great as a first novel. It is actually just a really good novel in its own right as well. So let's get straight to it. The world that this is set into, two key things that have happened in the future, because it's set a few hundred years in our future, and that is, first of all, humans get to Mars, and after a while poking around on Mars, they find alien artifacts. And they don't find any aliens. They're really confused about what the aliens are. There's some mysterious aliens in our past, of course, who must have visited our solar system. But what they do find, which is very handy, are star charts showing, like, Earth-equivalent planets around other nearby stars in other solar systems. So what happens is that Earth sends out lots of ships out to these planets to see what they'll find when they get there. And of course, they do find Earth-like planets, so humans can get there. Of course, it takes many generations for the starships to get there. But there's this key piece of technology, which is the thing which really makes the world of Altered Carbon and the other books in this series that Richard Morgan wrote, this is the thing that stands out. And that is, of course, the technology called the cortical stack and the multiple bodies that you can have. Let me explain it in a bit in depth, because this is the thing that sort of like carries the books. This is the good idea that sort of shows, shows what you can do with this kind of technology. So a cortical stack is this little thing that you put into the back of the brain, in the base of the brain at the top of the spine, and it stores everything that the human sees or thinks, or everything that goes on inside the human's brain goes through and is stored in this thing called a little cortical stack. And this stack can then, when the person dies, can be taken out, and not just taken out, but put into another body. And then when that body dies, you can take it out and you can put it into another body. But you don't, of course, have to wait until that body dies. You can swap your personality and your memories from body to body for different reasons, of course. And so what happens is that people actually think of themselves as that little bit in the back of the brain there, the cortical stack, and they think about the body that they're wearing at the moment as just a sleeve. Of course, most people go through life with just one sleeve, and when they die, they can't afford to buy another body, but some people can afford to buy another body, so they do, so they get like two lifetimes. And of course, some people can afford to just buy as many bodies as they want, and they have a form of immortality, and they live hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, but of course, the technology has only been around for a few hundred years. Of course, not just that, not just getting new bodies when one body dies, of course you can have different bodies for multiple purposes. So you can have a body for playing tennis, so you can have a body for having sex, you know, and of course we find these and many other examples in the book. You can have multiple bodies at the same time, except that's very, very, very illegal. You can use the cortical stacks to transport people very, very quickly, because of course you can use something called a needle cast, which instead of taking a body from one place to another, you can just send the information in the cortical stack to another cortical stack in a different part of the world. So if you want to get from America to Japan, you can get there very, very quickly in the instant it takes for a needle cast. But here's the key thing. Of course, you don't just get around the world. You can get to different planets. And this is what happened. What they did when they sent out spaceships to these other planets that they'd found on these alien star charts, they didn't send fully grown humans. They sent sort of like the technology that they could use to build new humans from embryos, and then of course when they're sort of fast forward like the growth of these embryos are fast forward until they're like adult humans, then they can just pop in a cortical stack with a needle cast from someone on Earth. So what happens is that the people on Earth, the adventurous people on Earth, sent out their information, their downloaded information, and then just woke up on a different planet. And that's how the different civilizations and the different governments and the different people and the different populations on the different planets was seeded. They didn't actually have to spend any time flying there. Once they got there, you know, once the human spaceships got there, then they could just, you know, download themselves across the light years there. And needle casts, they happen instantaneously as well. That's never really explained, but hey, it doesn't need to be explained. It can just be for purposes of the story. Another few things, of course, that you can do is store criminals. So if someone does something wrong, they just go, okay, we're going to take your body, and you can have your body back in 200 years. And of course, their body's not going to be around there in 200 years. So that's the punishment, being taken out of society for 200 years. And then, of course, when they get put into it, all their skills will be worthless. All their memories will be worthless. They won't know anyone else who's around at the time, you know. So that's the way that you can punish people. And what else? Oh, yes. You can run your cortical stack at high speed in a different computer. So if you get an artificial intelligence and you say, hey, artificial intelligence, you can run my cortical stack for me at a much higher speed. So you can actually do things in virtual worlds at much higher speeds, like 5, 10, 15 times the speed as you can actually think in the real world using your own brain. And yeah. Finally, I guess that the other thing that's here as well, of course, the Catholics are against all of this. They say, okay, you only have one life, and when you die, your soul goes to heaven, and your soul isn't in the cortical stack here. It's somewhere else. And of course, this is one of the features in this book, the Catholics and their protest about that. Again, it goes back to the review that I just did of A Canticle for Leibowitz, the sort of complete disconnect of the Catholic Church and how they're all about life, but in the end, it's not about life. It's all about death. And that's really what goes on here as well in this book. One of the upshots of this, getting onto our main character here, is that you can't fly in soldiers. So if anything happens on a different world and the Commonwealth or whatever, like the government that is over all of the different human worlds, if they disagree with something happening there, they can't just fly in soldiers. They can't just go, okay, let's fly in these soldiers, because of course it's going to take two generations for the soldiers to get there. So what they have are people called envoys who can be downloaded into any other body. It doesn't matter, they don't have to go into sort of like their own body somewhere else, they can go into any other body, and they have the mental training which they take with them in the cortical stack to be fantastic soldiers, to be really good at interrogation, to be really good policemen, and they can just do it in any body. So what will happen is that the protectorate or whatever, I can't remember the exact name of the armed forces that go in, they send in the envoys, and the envoys can go in any body and do their thing. And so, yeah, Of course, when they because they've had this special training, when they leave, when the envoys, when a soldier in the envoys leaves the envoys, they're not allowed to be in any kind of position of power. They're not allowed to have their own company and stuff like that. So pretty much they either turn to crime or they turn to being some kind of hired gun, some mercenary or some private investigator, private eye, you know, detective kind of guy. And that's our main character. His name is Takeshi Kovacs. He uses his envoy training, which is sort of he's got this super kind of intuition, super kind of detective skills and super fighting skills, which he can use in anybody. And he is our first person narrative kind of guy, and he is a complete psycho because his envoy training, he actually says at one point, they sort of like take out all of your humanity so you don't see other people as other people, or you can in a way, but generally you see them as problems to get past and things to defeat and that kind of thing. So, yeah, Takeshi Kovacs, no, sorry, it's not Kovacs, it actually says how you pronounce it. It's the world that he was born on, Harlan's world, has got Japanese roots and Czechoslovakian roots or Slovakian roots. So Takeshi is his first name, Japanese, but you don't really know him as that, you know him as Kovacs, but it's not Kovacs, it's pronounced Kovash or Kovash, something like that. And the people who know him, or the people the people who hire him get it right. They say Kovacs, and everyone else says Kovacs because they don't know how to pronounce it. And I don't know how to pronounce it, even though I've been told the right way. So I'm going to call it Kovacs because everyone else I've ever read or I've ever met who've talked about this book call it Kovacs, not Kovacs. So I'll call it Kovacs as well. Anyway, so complete psycho, and he carries out many of his actions in his sort of like a sociopathic way, you know, without any thought to other people's humanity, and with the thinnest of justifications. So very interesting. But because it's first person narrative, a little bit about the writing style here is he thinks he's fantastic, you know, and of course he is fantastic because he's telling the story, you know. So all the jokes that he tells are just great, and everyone loves him, and then the people who don't love him really, really hate him. So he's a bit of a character in that way. Very interesting character. So the story is that he comes to Earth. He's never been to Earth for the first time, and so it's, you know, in the interesting way, he's the fish out of water. His way of experiencing Earth for the first time is our way of experiencing the future Earth for the first time as well. And it is a very kind of cyberpunk world. Information technology is running things. The nation states are no longer there. It's all sort of corporations and rich people and that kind of thing running things. And it's like a very kind of dystopian world on the ground level, but as you go up through the classes, you get to a more and more of a utopian world for the richer classes, you know, that kind of basic thing. And he goes to San Francisco, which is now known as Bay City, so you see some of the sights there. You see the Golden Gate Bridge and other sort of like downtown areas as well. He wears a new sleeve, and when he gets downloaded, he doesn't know what he's doing there. He just gets downloaded into this new sleeve, this new body of this sort of like middle-aged, like 40-year-old guy. And when he leaves the sleeving thing, he's been needle cast in from a different world. And the police show an immediate interest to him, and he's not really quite sure what he's doing there. But it turns out he has a mission. Somebody has died. A very rich person has died. And this rich person thinks... the police think he just committed suicide, but he thinks, why on earth should I commit suicide? Because I'm being backed up. So if I commit suicide, it doesn't matter, you know, because I'll just get my new body anyway. So what has happened is that someone has died. The police don't care about it. They think it's suicide, which is a very well-worn device, you know, in this kind of in the kind of noir style, isn't it? The police aren't involved. They give up the case. They close the case. But of course, the interested parties think, no, it wasn't suicide. It really was a homicide, and I want to get to the bottom of this. And so they hire the private detective. And this is a standard thing in mystery fiction, I guess, to get a non-police detective involved in the story. But it works well. Anyway, so Kovacs has been told, you need to get to the bottom of this, and if you do, we'll clear your sheet, because of course Kovacs has sort of a history of crime, and also you'll get given a lot of money. And so that's what happens. So Kovacs goes about it and tries to find out why the person who has committed suicide or was killed, you know, why he committed suicide or why he was killed. You know, that's the mystery that runs throughout. So Kovacs does his own thing, which is generally, as you'd expect in this ultraviolet book, is pretty much he gets involved in gunfights, he gets involved in fistfights, and knife fights and sort of computer hacking kind of fights at the same time. He has fights in virtual reality and in the real world. He has fights of intellect and wit, mainly gunfights, though. So, of course, he does other things as well. He uses his envoy intuition to work out. And, of course, at the end, he works out everything's going on. And at the end, there's lots of different twists. And he gets involved in... There's lots of, like, conspiracy theories going on as well. And lots of different aspects come into it. Lots of different factions fighting each other and that kind of thing. As you would expect from this kind of thriller, noir kind of influence thriller. Lots of really good stuff, lots of really interesting things going on, and most of the interesting twists are brought about by this cortical stack technology. We don't really find out so much about the different worlds, you know. He mentions them, the different worlds that he's been to, and his past, but most of it is happening right there in the real world. Other things that come in, of course, as soon as he turns up, the police show an immediate interest, and we get to meet our sort of second main character, a woman police officer called Ortega, and you get to know things from the police point of view as well, the reasons why they gave up on the case, why this rich person, they said, well, he's just rich, we don't really, he's still alive, you know, he backed up his memory, doesn't really matter why he died, because he's still there, you know, he just lost a few hours of memory, you know, a few days of memory, doesn't really matter anymore. But yeah, lots of good stuff goes on. I really don't want to spoil it, so I'll just leave it there, but it's very satisfying by the end. Writing style, a bit about this, I said it sort of lay very kind of noir styling, you know, even to the point where the main character is trying to give up smoking, which is one of those things that I always think is there, you know, but otherwise a very dark style. A lot of the action happens at night. He goes into the underbelly of society, talking to prostitutes and talking to, you know, the, you know, drug dealers, all that other kind of thing, and other kinds of criminals which only exist in this world where the cortical stack is the main feature of life and society, where things really revolve around that. The language is very foul, as you would expect from someone, a foul character like Takeshi Kovacs, and all the other things as well. And there's lots of sex in it as well. Well, I wouldn't say lots of sex. There's a few sexual encounters, but it's very explicit and quite sexy as well. Sort of presses the right buttons when you're reading it. You're like, oh, okay, interesting. You don't normally get sex described in that detail, or not in the kind of fiction that I normally read. But it does, it's not gratuitous. Well, it feels a bit gratuitous, but then, of course, later on in the book, you go, oh, that's what, and it does play into the main story in important ways. But otherwise it's very, very action oriented. There's a little bits of people describing stuff and explaining stuff to each other, but a lot of it is the crimes are solved by Takeshi going out and doing stuff and finding stuff out and things. It is actually the second time I've read this book. I read it before a few years ago, and I really enjoyed it. So reading it again, I didn't mind at all. But I wanted to review it because it's just a good book, and I really enjoyed reading it on the flight out here. I had an overnight flight and spent most of it reading this book. So I read the whole thing in about 2 days, and, you know, 24 hours to finish the book on my flight here. But I wanted to read it again because I read Black Man by Richard Morgan, otherwise known as 13, and I gave it a very bad review, and I just wanted to, like, share my delight in Richard Morgan's world rather than my frustration with it. The thing is, like I say, yeah, I've read it before, and I'd actually forgotten a lot of the big twists. I mean, there was a lot of scenes and a lot of action that I remembered, and the characters and the lines that he was saying, you know, and the different relationships that he had with different people. But I thought, oh, I can't remember what actually happened and what the big thing was. And it took me a long time getting through the book, and I still hadn't worked out what was going to happen at the end of the book, even the second time I read it. And this is one of the only things that I really, I wouldn't say really dislike. It's one of the only points against this book that I have. And that is the intuition that Kovacs uses. It's his envoy intuition. And I don't have that. So Kovacs is picking up lots of things here and lots of things there. And I don't. So even up until the end, until Kovacs is explaining it to other people, I don't know, and I don't realise what's going on. Normally in books, I do. I sort of see what's going to happen and even until the end of the book, like the main character or the main detective figure will be explaining it to his client. And I'd be like, yeah, of course I know this. That will all become clear. In this book, lots of action happens and only Kovacs understands what is going on right until the end. And it's like at the end, he's like, oh, and this person works for that person. And you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But the keys to it, the clues to it, weren't really there. It's because the only way I could have known that that person was working for the other person was for something that Kovacs has just explained just before. And it's this envoy intuition that Kovacs has and that I don't have as a writer that sort of makes it, you know, it's sort of, it's a little, it's not very satisfying, because there's no, I don't feel there's any way that me as a reader could have worked out the twist at the end. Now, again, maybe my intelligence isn't there, but I just think it's a little bit of a weakness in the writer. It could have been like a few more clues, because his leaps of intuition, his leaps of understanding that Kovacs goes through, they're just a little bit too big. It's sort of like, it's like click and he understands, and click and he understands, and me as a reader, I don't have that envoy intuition, which is a bit bad. Another thing, at the end of the book as well, his crime solving, there is a big action finale, and he does do things with the help of the police at the end, which I think, the police, I just don't believe the police would have gone along with some of the things that Kovacs wants to do at the end. And at the end, everyone lives happily ever after. Well, they don't, of course, because you can die quite easily in this book, and especially if Kovacs is around. So not everyone lives happily ever after. But there is a sort of like a very good ending to the book, even though it's sort of like his Kovacs story is continued in following books. Everything is definitely completely wrapped up here. And it just seems a little bit too neat. You'd think, well, after what he did, he shouldn't just walk away as the big hero at the end, especially because he is just a complete psychopath character. If I was the police, I'd have said, yep, great, we're gonna let you free, you're gonna have a different body in the different place, and then I've just locked him up. I'd have just real deathed him, just wiped his memory. Getting on to some other characters, the secondary characters are very interesting, I think, as well, very well rounded. There's Ortega, I mentioned her before, she's the main police contact that Takeshi Kovacs has, and I really liked her story, and especially her past connection to Kovacs. Well, not her past connection to Kovacs, but the body that Kovacs is in. Again, I'm not going to give anything away there, but there is that connection which makes their interaction, Kovacs and Ortega's interaction, very, very interesting indeed. Other things, that you got the Meths, which are the Methuselah people, the people who live long lives, and of course they're very rich, and they don't care about the little people. They're the big people not caring about the little people. So you've got the very rich people, and they're all written quite interestingly. And the few people that you think, oh, well, they're very one-dimensional characters. Of course, later in the book, you realise that they're very one-dimensional characters for a purpose. It's because they are one-dimensional. It's not the bad writing, and I actually quite like that kind of thing there. There's the Hendrix, which is an artificial intelligence hotel, and it's quite funny that the hotel is like a robot hotel, and nobody ever goes there because it's a robot hotel. There's not that human touch to the service which you need. And the worst thing is that the hotel has programmed into it, looking after guests is almost like a sexual experience. It's sort of like he gets sexual kicks or some kind of kicks from having guests in his hotel, and he never has guests in his hotel. So when Kovacs turns up and lives in this hotel for a while, the hotel, the Hendrix, does everything he possibly can to help out Kovacs in every possible way, which is an idea that I really like, that the Hendrix has got some kind of sexual kind of twisted infatuation with Kovacs and will do anything for him just to keep him in the hotel to quite, you know, long lengths the hotel would go to. Again, I don't want to give away how much he's involved or how he's involved in the story, but he is one of the major characters by the end, one of the key characters in the end. And there were, of course, other characters which are all quite interesting. Another thing that I don't like about this book is the bad guys never seem to be any kind of match for Kovacs. It doesn't matter what happens to Kovacs, he's always got a way out of it. And the only time that Kovacs ever gets into danger is when he gets into a situation and you think, well, I really don't know how he's going to get out of this one, and he really can't get out of a situation. The only time that ever happens is when Kovacs gives himself up to the bad guys, which is, again, it's a bit of a pity that that happens, and I never really thought, I never had any doubt in my mind that Kovacs was ever going to have any trouble taking down the big guys at the end, because he's just supremely confident. Again, this is because I think it's this, like, unreliable first-person narrative. He writes it as though he's just the fantastic... No, he doesn't write it. Kovacs tells the story as though he's just the most fantastic person in the world ever. And of course, the bad guys are never going to be any problem for him, and they're not. Which, again, it makes it an interesting book written in that way, but less satisfying. I really wanted like the main bad guy, but because it's a mystery, we're never really quite sure who the main bad guy is going to be throughout the book. Yeah, I think that's mostly about it with story and writing and characters. Oh, technology. I have a note down here. I didn't actually write down anything as I was reading the book, because the main technology is, of course, the cortical stack idea. That's the key thing. But there is, of course, lots of other things like flying cars and gravity, anti-gravity harnesses and things like that. Most of the technology revolves around weaponry, though, and military things. So you've got really cool guns, you've got cool knives, cool energy beams, you've got explosives as well, in cool explosives, and dart guns and robot kind of weaponry and different kind of flying machines and viruses as well. When you download a virus, like a computer virus, into someone's cortical stack, it's completely screwed. And of course, the special body, the different bodies. Of course, that's one of the main technological things. I mentioned them before. You can have different bodies for different reasons. One of the best things that you can have is a body for fighting, or a body for police work, or a body for military action. One of the main things that they have is a faster nervous system, like some kind of like a secondary nervous system laid over your own, which means you can it's sort of like inbuilt into the body, which means you can have like fantastic fighting skills and fantastic reaction speeds, which is a key thing in the world of Takeshi Kovacs and Altered Carbon. And of course, the other things that you can use your special bodies for, like I said before, sex and tennis and other things like that, which is all very interesting there. The themes of the book, there's got lots of themes. It touches on many different ideas. One of the main things that you can get from the cortical stack technology is, of course, mortality and the worth of human life and the value of human life. Of course, violence is another big thing with Takeshi. Kovacs is a very, very violent person, and that you can kill people with different severity, and you can, of course, you can just make it so their body is completely mashed up and they've got to get new body parts, but their head is okay. Of course, then you can shoot their head, which means their brain is gone, which means they need a whole new sleeve, they need a whole new body, but then they have their cortical stack put into another body, which is, you know, some death, but it's not like real death, because they have a continuation, some kind of immortality there. Then, of course, you have real death. But if you inflict real death on somebody, it means you really have to decide. It's not like, oh, I killed them accidentally. It's really hard to kill someone for real accidentally. You've got to actually sort of take a laser weapon, some kind of like plasma weapon, and burn away their cortical stack. And then it's like, yes, I have really, really killed someone. And it's like, if you do that, you're really, really, really meaning to kill them. And should you decide to do that? Well, in some cases you might, and in some cases you shouldn't. And it's that kind of different levels of mortality, different levels of violence, different levels of murder, which is explored very well in this book indeed. Of course, you've got ideas of longevity, and should rich people live longer than the little people? Maybe, I don't know, if they can afford it. Or should you live long lives at all? Again, that's really explored in a lot of detail in this book. Religion, the Catholic religion, and how they say, oh, when someone dies, you know, if you sign yourself into the Catholic Church when you die, of course you can't be brought back to life. And there's one political thing that's going on where someone, a Catholic, died, and you know, in some kind of situation, and the police are saying, okay, we want to bring them back to life, not for any reason. It's just that they're the only person, they're the only witness of a crime, and we want to lock up somebody else. We want to get to the bottom of this other crime. And of course, the Catholics are going, no, you can't bring back, even if they're a witness to a death, you can't bring them back. Anyway, yes, so religion being used to suppress people is another theme. Money and power is another theme as well going on here. And there's lots of other stuff. I don't want to go into a lot of it, but it is very interesting. There's a lot going on. And the best thing about it is that it's all explained with action. It's all explained with plot. It's not explained with people talking to each other and saying, ah, let's have this conversation about mortality. It's explored in the world, which is really good. And it's actually quite, I wouldn't really know how to explain it really, except that I had a conversation in the bookshop back in Berlin, and there was the guy who works in the bookshop there talking to someone else, and the other person was asking for recommendations. He says, yeah, I want some, you know, science fiction, but I don't just want it to be, you know, spaceships and lasers and stuff. I want it to be a bit more. I want there to be a bit more kind of ideas and themes, and to be a bit more kind of literature. And of course, I was pointing out, you know, Alan, the guy who works there, was pointing out different things, and I actually picked up Altered Carbon, and I said, you should really check this out. And And the guy we're looking for the recommendation says, oh, that's just sex and violence and guns and stuff. And I said, no, it isn't. It's really a lot more to this book. And Alan, the guy who works there, sort of like thought about it. And then he was like nodding and going, yeah, you're right. There really is a lot more to this book. And it's like, yeah, I hate to admit it, but there really is a lot more going on in Altered Carbon than guns and firefights. But it's done so well because it's part of the world. All the questions, all the different themes and ideas that are going on are explored in the action or explored in the decisions of the main characters, but sort of obliquely, subtly, in a kind of not in your face kind of way. Which brings me back to Black Man by Richard Morgan, his I think fifth science fiction novel, and that is like the opposite of this. He wanted it to be too much a book about mortality and violence and humanity and identity. There's lots of genetics going on there and genetic manipulation and all these different kinds of things. And I emailed back and forth with Richard Morgan explaining pretty much why I didn't like the book, and he was trying to defend Black Man back to me, and he was saying, no, but it really is, and it's all about the characters, it's all about the questions, it's all about the themes, and it's a very adult grown-up book, whereas Altered Carbon was just a first novel. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. Altered Carbon had all of this different stuff in it, all of these different ideas and themes in it. It talks about, you know, gender roles and religion and mortality the same way, well, not in the same way, but to the same point that Black Man did. The thing is, with Black Man, you'll have two characters sitting down and having a conversation with each other, and you'll have one person having some kind of internal conflict and really agonizing over something, and another person will be involved in one of the main characters, the female character in there. She talks about her religion and her, you know, the way that she doesn't like Islam and the way that she, you know, disagrees with this and disagrees with that. She pretty much talks about it and just has a conversation. It doesn't really fit in with the story very much at all. Here in Altered Carbon, the whole thing about Catholics is right there in the nitty-gritty part of the world, and right there in the, you know, it's one of the key plot points. And that's a much better way for me when I'm reading a book to get across main themes. I don't want to have two characters sitting down and having a conversation. I want the themes to be wrapped up within the fiber, within the right there in the words and in the plot of the book. And it really came back to me when I was emailing back and forth with Richard Morgan, and he said, Takeshi Kovacs is just this and just that, you know, it's just he wasn't talking it down in any way. I mean, it sounded like it, but he was saying that was just a first novel, and, you know, and I was really trying to do a lot more with Black Man. And I said, well, you failed in a way, because in Black Man, you know, he's violent, you know, the main guy there, the main star, I can't remember the star of the book, I can't remember his name now, but the main character is doing this kind of stuff. And I said, yeah, but you're talking about humanity and mortality and stuff like that. But in Altered Carbon, there's this whole point at one point where, you know, it actually happens in a few points, where someone is double-sleeved, where it means they're in two different bodies, they make a copy of their brain. And of course, you've got to decide which one of the two characters, of these diverging characters, is going to be the real person at the end of it. And the way, don't want to give it away because it happens near the end of the book, but in the way that they do that in Altered Carbon, which is pretty much a coin toss, it's not a coin toss, but it's sort of left up to chance in a way to decide who is going to be me in my future, which of these two identities is going to be me. And I was reading this and I was thinking, this is absolutely awesome, that the way that they actually decide how one person becomes that person into the future and not the other person. I'm just thinking, this says so much about humanity and identity. And it's in the book, it's in the plot, it's just one thing that the character meets along the way and gets past. And it, you know, it happens a few times in the book. How, you know, what is it when you are two people, and how do you work with yourself when they're also you, and that kind of thing. You know, it happens a few times in this book, and it happens, of course, a few times in the other book set in the Altered Carbon, the Takeshi Kovacs universe. And I really love that. But then in Black Man, the same ideas are explored by two characters talking to each other, or one person, you know, and he was thinking in his head about this and, you know, this, and it's sort of like just preaching in a way. And that's what I really didn't like about Black Man, is that it was just sort of like people, you know, it was just blah, blah, blah. And also, again, like I said in my last review of a Canticle for Leibowitz. I don't mind reading about despicable characters as long as they're interesting. You know, Takeshi Kovacs, complete psychopath, but actually quite fun character, even though he's like really nasty. And I, you know, if I ever met him, I would just be running as fast as I could in the other direction. But at least he's interesting, and that's what it comes down to. And this character is an interesting character, and all of the characters in Altered Carbon are very interesting, whereas in Black Man, or 13 as that book is called in America, it just doesn't have that same kind of ring to it of interest and reality and just a coherence of the themes just being tied perfectly into the plot. The theme sort of stood aside from the plot in Black Man. Although one thing I did notice is that the main female character, who is one actually the main characters in Black Man, I didn't really go into her story much in the review of Black Man, but her name is Ertekin. And in this book, Altered Carbon, I realise one of the minor characters is called Ertekin, and I'm thinking, hey, wait a second, maybe two characters in two different books by the same author called Ertekin, maybe the universe of Black Man extended out into the future becomes the world of Altered Carbon. I can't really see how it works with the different timelines, because they're both set in Earth's future. But, you know, that idea of two characters called Ertekin, maybe somehow the two books could be, or the two worlds could be linked up in the future. I don't know how he would do that. I mean, it would be like a major task to link these two worlds, but hey, maybe it could there. So let's get back to Richard Morgan's Altered Carbon and the star rating. I might as well just give it 4 stars, maybe a bit more, 4.1, 4.2 stars. No, I'll just give it 4 stars because there are a few issues with the book which make it a not perfect book, but it is really worth reading this book. Even if you don't like all the sex and violence, there is a lot that you can get out of it, a lot of new ideas, a lot of fresh ideas, which I can actually see being picked up by other science fiction authors in books that have come out since this. The idea of like backing up the memories and recovering memories seems to be quite a big point in Peter F. Hamilton's the Dreaming Void and the Temporal Void books. That is one thing that people do. They go, okay, we've got to get the cortical stacks out of these people. I'm thinking, wait a second, this is Altered Carbon. Maybe it's been done before, but I think to have a whole book revolving, a whole world revolving around it like Altered Carbon does, is very interesting. Two final points is that Richard Morgan did write two more novels set in this world. One is called Fallen Angels. I think that was the second book. And the third book is called Woken Furies. Woken, not Furies, Woken Furies. And the Fallen Angels isn't as good as Altered Carbon. I think it's the weakest of the three. It's set on this world where there's been some nuclear weapon gone off, and Takeshi Kovacs has to go in and head up some kind of military team. But they're in like this nuclear wasteland, and they know that their bodies are going to die, which I think is quite interesting. So they're being sent on a mission where they know that their bodies are going to die, but they should get back and you know, back to the real world again. And by that time, their cortical stacks can be put into fresh bodies again. It is interesting, you know, alien artifacts going on in that, I think is the one of the main points in it. I can't remember exactly what happens in there. Well, I do remember what happens, but I can't remember. I don't want to say too much in case I spoil it. Woken Furies is set on Harlan's world again, which is Takeshi Kovacs' home world. So it talks about much more about his past. I mean, it's set in his, you know, it's set after Altered Carbon, quite a few, I think about 100 years again into the future. But it talks about characters that he knows and places that he was as a child. So I actually like that a lot more because you get to know Takeshi Kovacs and his world and the politics which he espouses in Altered Carbon. It's a lot more political novel, and I think it gets back onto the ground which Altered Carbon is in. Maybe not quite as good as Altered Carbon, but it's a very different book. Even though it's very lots of sex and lots of action, it's a lot more political rather than the themes that are inside in the book are a lot more political rather than I don't know. It's less about humanity and mortality and these other kind of themes than it is about politics, which, again, I think is quite good. The politics are a bit more universal, whereas the themes in Altered Carbon are very much tied to what's going on in the book of Altered Carbon, or the world in Altered Carbon. Maybe that's a bit confusing what I'm trying to say there. Also, if you don't want to bother with Fallen Angels, you can just skip straight to Woken Furies. The books don't reference the spoiler points in each other's. You know, he does say, oh, I've been to Earth, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really mention what he did on Earth very much at all, and that's quite good. That all the books stand alone very much as individual novels. But I would suggest reading Altered Carbon first because it is the best one, I think. That's about it. Check out my review of Canticle for Leibowitz if iTunes skipped it for you. Otherwise, again, I won't be reviewing the other books, I don't think, or not anytime soon, because I have read them over the last few years, and just just go with it that they're 3 to 4 star books each. I'd have to read them again to see exactly how much I enjoy them. But I did enjoy them both quite a lot. So, yeah, all of these books, solid 4, 3.5, 4 star books. So check them out. They're definitely really well worth it. I think that's about it. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. A quick edit here. I forgot to mention the next book that I'm going to be reviewing, which is Alistair Reynolds' Century Rain. Again, I got this out as a library book while I'm here on a cruise ship. So hopefully I'll have enough time on the cruise ship to finish this book, although because it is quite a big chunky book. If I don't review that book, if I don't finish it, I'm sure I'll find it somewhere back in Berlin and we'll review it then. Otherwise, I'll be reading on the way home, on the plane home, I'll be reading Ian M. Banks' latest novel set in the culture universe called Matter, which I'm really looking forward to because it's new culture material and I've not read any Ian M. Banks book for a while. So I look forward to reviewing them. So really, see you next time.